We like to remind everyone that theosophy is the accumulated wisdom of the ages. That traditionally has been passed down from generation to generation orally. But in this modern day, we have become fortunate that these ideas have been written down. And we as theosophists endeavor to keep these ideas alive in the world in which we live. We do this not through an organization or bylaws or constitution, but we do it through independent devotion to that cause of theosophy. And that cause is embodied in three fundamental principles. Through a truer understanding, one becomes firmly convinced that there is a oneness to life and that universal brotherhood is not an idea or an ideal, but simply a fact in nature. We do this through our own independent search and our own independent questioning. And nothing that is said in these rooms is to be held as absolute truth. The only absolute truth that we can endeavor to hold in our grasp is something that we have ingested mentally and we have absorbed into our very being. And we see the truth that lies within that. It's self-realized. Now, we try not to get into other issues other than those that are theosophical, and we stick to those straight line teachings of the founders of this modern day theosophical movement. So what is our basis for gathering here together? Well, it's similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, which has, again, no neither constitution nor bylaws nor officers. Now, we regard all of you theosophists who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. So all are welcomed. And theosophists are constantly asked, not only by those around them, but by themselves, how can I best affect a change in the world in which I live? And we see that we want to run out and feed the hungry and heal the sick and do all those things that we thought are the humane thing to do. But as human beings, the most humane thing we can do is give our fellow human beings a firm basis on which to test life and to see the truth that life is evolving from within out. And the ideas that we hold are the ideas which manifest. So in keeping with this, this lodge holds two weekly meetings that are open and free to the public. For these theosophical ideas cannot be sold, should not be sold, but are the birthright of every human being. But as HPV said, this philosophy was called forth by those who wanted it. And that is the cry of all of us. You have to want this. You have to desire this fervently to find the truth that lies within. Now, of course, we have a Sunday morning meeting, which you're presently attending, which begins at 11 a.m. promptly and ends at 12. Doors open at 10:30. And we endeavor to take some theosophical idea and expand upon it. Now, during the month of November, we have been taking up general theosophical principles. And last week we talked about reincarnation, and the week before, karma. And the week before that, one life, one self, one source. So we culminate this month-long study with this morning's topic of the basics of human evolution. Now, in December, we begin a new cycle, and it will be called that, Cycles and Cycle and Cyclic Law. Working on and working with cycles is our next Sunday's talk. Now, also, a little more structure is given in our Wednesday evening classes. We study together the ocean of theosophy, which simply means that we try to saturate ourselves with the ideas before coming to class. And we take that assimilation and we share it in our weekly meetings. And we take up a subject that is found in the ocean of theosophy. We go through it chapter by chapter. And right now, I'm not sure what chapter it is, but it's on the human constitution. And we have started with universals, and we're coming into particulars. But this idea of a human constitution is based on universal principles. So that which applies to the universe applies to man in particular. Now, these classes begin at 7:45 and end promptly at 9 p.m., Now, prior to this Wednesday evening class, we have a library, which we are fortunate to have, which has straight-line theosophical teachings and ideas that you're welcome to come in and peruse and study in this room, but this is not a lending library. If you wish to take home books and ideas that will help us in our studies during the week and to help us retreat to some fundamental ideas, we have on the book table books written by H.P. Blavatsky, William Q. Judge, and Robert Crosby. And even those books which far preceded these teachers, the Upanishads, the Bhagavad Gita, the Voice of the Silence, are all books which endeavor to awaken in the soul our true nature. And the only way that we can gain greater understanding is through the use of the mind. Blend it with the heart. Make us more human in our endeavor to embrace these fundamental truths that does not leave anyone or anything out. Everything is included. And if you come across an idea, a situation, and want to know if it is theosophical, if it leaves anyone out, it does not. So, we all would like also like to mention that in the spirit of these ideas and teachings, these rooms are kept open. Now, it is a big building. It has needs just as each human being has a need. But it is only a building in which these ideas can be propagated, can be put before the public. So, we as theosophists voluntarily contribute time, service, and money in the endeavor to keep before the public these ideas. Now, there's no responsibility implied or inferred or implied, but only the ones which thou sees in himself and the need to contribute, and in whatever way one sees fit. And everyone is welcome to participate. Now, we have come to that time of the year when cycles are all around us. We are constantly reminded of days past and cycles to come. And keeping with that movement or that tradition, this morning we are going to take up a fundamental idea, which one which we all are fascinated with. And that is the basics of human evolution. So we will have these ideas presented, and then we will open up our meeting for questions.
The term evolution basically means alterations through time, typically very slow changes over large intervals of time. In the broadest sense, evolution is merely change, and so is all-pervasive. Galaxies, languages, even political systems all evolve. Some people confuse Darwinism with evolution. Darwinism is simply Charles Darwin's proposal for the methods by which natural processes cause the evolution of the species. Stephen Gould, a very noted American paleontologist, said, "Darwin continually emphasized the difference between his two great accomplishments, establishing the fact of evolution and proposing a theory he called natural selection." And that was to explain how evolution worked. Many scientists before and since have supported evolution while proposing alternate mechanisms that drive it. Evolution of galaxies, of the Earth, of plant and animal life are accepted by essentially all scientists except those who are conservative Christians, those who believe that the Bible is error-free. In the West, North America in particular, beliefs regarding the origin of the species mostly fall into three general categories, starting with the most popular, creation science. God created the universe during six consecutive 24-hour periods, less than 10,000 years ago, precisely as one of the literal interpretations of the biblical book of Genesis would indicate. All the various kinds of plants and animals that currently exist and that once were in existence but are now extinct are descendants of the original life forms that God created during that single week of creation. Over 99% of polled scientists believe that a literal translation of Genesis does not represent reality, and thus the creation science is false. The theistic view is that the universe is about 14 billion years old. The Earth's crust developed about 4.5 billion years ago. Some believers in this option suggest that God created the first cell. Others suggest that the first cell happened as a result of some unknown natural process. Subsequently, God used evolution as a tool to guide the development of each new species. By steering evolution over time, God eventually produced human beings. The scientific view is that evolution was driven by blind, unguided natural forces without a goal. Darwin's belief that natural occurring differences among offspring led to evolution of the species through natural selection is the main, or perhaps the only, driving principle behind evolution. Those who believe in the inerrancy of the Bible attempt to follow eternal biblical truths. However, they seem to have difficulty in settling on a single understanding of the origins and development of plant and animal species. They have ended up with many different conflicting theories which cannot be harmonized. Meanwhile, the scientific community has arrived at an almost complete consensus in the theory of evolution. As new evidence is found, some details of their theories may be modified. And if they don't have an answer about this new evidence, they simply say that they have insufficient knowledge at this time. HPB explains evolution beautifully and simply, if you can believe that. It is the act of unfolding and the process of growth and development, as the evolution of a flower from a bud or an animal from an egg. Yet the bud must be traced back to its parent plant and its seed, and the egg to the animal or the bird that laid it, or at any rate to the speck of protoplasm from which it expanded and grew. And both the seed and the speck must have had the latent potentialities in them for the reproduction and gradual development. The unfolding of the 1,001 forms or phases of evolution they went through, which they must pass through before the flower or the animal were developed. Hence the future plan, or at least a design, must be there. The key to the meaning of evolution in theosophy is that the core of every entity is a divine monad, expressing its faculties and powers through the ages in various vehicles which change by improving as the ages pass. These vehicles are not physical bodies alone, but also the interior sheaths of consciousness which together forms man's entire constitution, extending from the divine monad through the intermediate ranges of consciousness to the physical body. The evolving entity can become or show itself to be only what it already essentially is. Therefore, evolution is bringing out or unfolding of what already pre-exists, active or latent within. Evolution is, in fact, not a thing in itself, but a procedure of nature that is wholly governed by the karmic causes originated in previous periods of existence of any evolving entity whatsoever. And since evolution is but the bringing forth into manifestation of seeds of activity sown in its own fabric or structure, it is, of course, evident that it is karma, or nature's fundamental law of cause and effect, which is the originating cause of all evolutionary activity. There could be no evolution, not even the physical evolution, unless three things were present. First, there must be a substance, whatever it may be, which is capable of being transformed. Secondly, there must be an orderly mode by which all transformations in that substance take place. You could call that law. Thirdly, there must be the process of the transformation. Or, when considering these three elements, the substance, the law, and the transformation, it can be seen that one is perishable, and one has both a mortal and an immortal essence. But the third, that which produces the transformation, is omnipresent, eternal, universal, never could be created and never could be annihilated. There you have the three fundamental propositions of all existence expressed in terms of science. this basic trinity whose extensions, ramifications, and modifications have produced everything that is, from a sun to a grain of sand, from a daisy on the foothills of a mountain to the mountain itself, and yes, to man. The evolution of humanity takes place against the background of a living earth and a living cosmos, subject to nature's repetitive operations. We call the law of cycles, and guided by superior beings. Reincarnation gives us insights into this panorama, for it pictures each person as an immortal pilgrim with the spark of the divine in his heart. All the potentials of this divine source reside within each of us, and also in all other beings, and even forces and worlds. In the bird winging its way through the blue sky, in the lightning and the storm, and in our beautiful earth, so patiently nourishing its kingdoms. However, the knowledge of our divine ancestry and the brotherhood of all life begins with great responsibilities and accountabilities. Those of this knowledge and persuasion can no longer go through life impulsively and without thinking. For we have put our foot on a path, and the first step on this path is to live not for ourselves, but to live to benefit mankind. Topic for today, once again, the basics of human evolution.
We think no other subject in theosophy creates such contradictions in our nature, because we think we understand evolution because we've gone to school and we've been taught what evolution is. But when we come to theosophy, everything's set on its ear. It is not what we thought. It is more than what we imagined. Let me just read a paragraph to an article about evolution, and it embodies what was just presented to us. Evolution is an unfolding from within outward, a basic law. It is the process of growth of all beings, whether man or God, plant, animal, earth, sun, or solar system. Growth means, essentially, an expansion in range and expression of intelligence. The development of form is always incidental, a byproduct of the inner growth. So the one fundamental idea is that we unfold from within outward. The other fundamental idea for evolution is that we evolve from above below. So when taking up these ideas, we need to keep those ideas somewhere in the back of our mind and check what our understanding is against those two fundamental ideas. Yes?
When it comes to evolution, you've heard the idea that an adept is a self-evolved person, and that each human being has the capacity and the responsibility for his own evolution and for the evolution of everything around him. But at the same time, people who don't take responsibility for their own evolution, and they've never heard of these ideas and they couldn't care less, does that mean either they don't evolve, or they don't evolve as much, or they don't evolve in the way that they could, that would be better if they were concentrating on it, or... So we guess the idea is, you know, when we hear the basics of human evolution, gee whiz, it's a kind of foreign to most people. What do we do? What are the exact basics for on a personal level?
One of the fundamental ideas is that we proceed in this evolutionary journey from an impulse within. But when we become self-conscious, it's through self-induced and self-devised means that we move forward. So if we do not take up the responsibility for our existence here and for our development, and we're simply looking for the impulse that will change us, it doesn't happen. Now, we are influenced constantly by higher beings, by higher intelligences. And we need to make ourselves receptive to those ideas. Now, we may seem that those around us are not engaged the way we are engaged, but that often is not the case. For the turmoil of life, the suffering of life, arouses in each of us a question of why. Why do I suffer? Why are things the way they are? Why is humanity in this present state that it is? Why? Well, evolution will answer these questions. Maybe not completely, but as the more we investigate and try to understand, we realize that our growth is not from the lower kingdoms to the higher kingdoms, but it is influenced by spirit from above, below. So what makes us porous to these ideas? What makes us porous to the ideas is simply our desire to want to know the truth, want to know why we suffer, want to know why. You had a question? No? Yes, please.
So it was discussed about how evolution is the unfolding of this potentiality, which maybe I'm understanding it wrong, but to me that means that something that everything that is kind of has already happened and there's nothing new to be created. And this really is, then we're not really pioneers in that sense. Part of that that really kind of bothers me, maybe bothers the ego in me, but you know, this whole idea of evolution is not like creating something new. That it's already, everything has already happened, and it's just an unfolding of it.
Well, in part, we understand what you're saying is that, you know, there is a plan. All right. But the plan does not hold the details, it just holds the outline. We think the analogy is a play, all right? If we are going to go to a play, there's a lot of things that have to be done before the play begins. There has to be a place to hold the play, there has to be scenery, there has to be setting, there has to be a script, there has to be actors. Now, once all of these come together, then the play begins. Well, that's sort of like us. All these things, after great periods of evolution, have brought together the scenery and the setting and the players. And not until this period in our evolution do all these come together and the play begins. But it's taken billions of years to reach this stage. Now, everything cannot be scripted, that this is going to happen, that's because man has a free will. Man is a god. Man is a creator. So the script is only that man has godlike potential. But the choice lies with the man, or the woman, but of the being, to make that choice. Make that choice whether to raise the oneself up or degrade oneself. Now, we don't look at it at that, in that simple terms. That do we do something that is going to be beneficial to everyone, Or are we going to just go and self-indulge ourselves and find ourselves at some point in our life in darkness and despair? There's a choice that's made, always a choice that's made. We have either a choice to become passive in our nature and to be led and guided by all the forces around us, or to become a God in potential and choose how we live our life, choose what we do, choose how we think. And it's sort of like it's you're willing yourself to be more than what you are, because we are more than what we see. As it was read, this human form is just incidental. That as the mind expands, it needs a better expression of what it knows.
The idea was brought forth that things exist in germ or idea, and then they manifest from that idea outward. But the idea itself, the plan itself, the germ itself evolves over time. So, and it is the result of what we've done with that idea in the past. We may have an idea of a book, but the manifestation of a book, or the idea of what a book is, evolves over time. It doesn't have any one constant appearance.
Yes, we think that point is well taken. The germ, the plan lies within the germ. But once the expression of that germ takes place, it can be altered by the intelligence that uses it. And the book was an example. We always thought a book was paper and binding. Now it's a Kindle. Now it's something far different than what we may have thought 20 years ago. But within it is the same thing. There is that seed, and the expression of that seed takes many different ramifications in the corner.
I was just thinking if it's possible that to express these manifestations or seeds that we are, the human being, the human body, the human form, over thousands of generations or incarnations as simply multiple facets of a diamond that is polished one facet at a time or one incarnation at a time over thousands of incarnations. So we begin as a rough stone, and then over thousands of incarnations, each facet being the facet of what we need to learn, be it forgiveness, be it compassion, be it intellect, whatever it is polished until that semi-perfection is reached in the body that we are.
Well, we endeavor to hold that as an idea before us, but oftentimes we try to polish that diamond and to make it more brilliant. But oftentimes that diamond finds itself back in the earth and covered up in darkness. So, but when we speak in terms of evolution, you know, this form, this man form, had evolved periods long in the past. These forms were perfected long ago, and through this evolutionary process, we are now present on this globe. Just because we think we have one life, or we even reincarnate, but we've been here through eternity, and that we've been on other planets, other globes, with many, many experiences that has brought us to this stage of evolution, to ever perfect ourselves, to be a better expression of that godlike quality or that spiritual quality which resides in all of us. That is what this evolutionary process is for the unfoldment within of what we truly are. And that is harmony.
Now, spirit and matter are co-eternal, and there's always an unfoldment. In a sense, creation is what we do. It's our free will. It's we can create new things with our free will, but spirit and matter are really co-eternal, and there's an ever unfoldment. It's not just the blind leading the blind, which is often with the evolution, with natural selection, in a sense, it's the blind leading the blind. But there's always that vivifying intelligence, the architect that is behind it all. Is there not?
Well, let's think for a second. How did we ever get here? What was the process for us to even venture into this room? Well, we probably have had teachers. We probably had those who have shown us things that we have never thought we could understand, that have guided us through elementary school, through high school, through college, and then into later life. There is always someone to aid us, but we need to ask for that help. And oftentimes we think, well, we're not asking, we're just struggling with something. Well, if we struggle with something long enough, we are asking for an answer to a question. And it is stated in the philosophy that everything is guided by intelligence. Otherwise, nature unaided fails. There are those beings who have perfected themselves in prior periods of evolution, who have gone through all the conditions of this earth life, and now who stand at the pinnacle of evolution in this round and guide humanity and aid it, first of all, in not destroying itself, but aid it in understanding itself. It's a unfolding from within outward. So that spiritual nature is by reading these books, by embracing these ideas, that we come in contact with these more spiritual beings, these more perfected beings, because the ideas that are embodied in these books is the spirit of life.
Very interesting that theosophy brings us a few fundamental ideas. For what? Well, we thought of the word religion, and all people all over the globe profess a religion. And the idea of binding back. So, in reality, it seems there has to be some fundamental ideas that will join us all together, and that the ULT exists for the purpose of giving those fundamental ideas, which in as simple a form as possible, so no matter the education or the background, we are informed that we are thinkers, and therefore we should think about them. And we get the idea that those principles lead to unity. What are those principles?
Well, this idea of unity is not an abstract idea. It's a fact in nature. These bodies are the prime example of that unity, of that harmony which exists within nature itself. That we, as thinking human beings, are given a choice to either work in harmony or oppose that harmony. And all the conflict, all the the things that are unresolved in life is where personality has stood against that which is harmonious. For our personality thinks that it knows best, and it is not humble enough to embrace universal ideas. That's not saying that that's what our personality wants to do. Our personality wants to be the God. But because the personality is ever transitory and it never dies, that is not what is reborn. That eternal part of our nature is reborn again and again and again. So the fundamental ideas of theosophy are the ones that we use to look at life as it now exists, whether it's true or whether it's false. That's how we determine it, on this basis of its unity, how it's expressed, you know, that life never ceases. Life is constant. It's a coming and a going. It is like the days and nights. It is ever present. And that the evolutionary process is for the fulfillment of the soul. It is here for the expression of the soul. It's for self-consciousness to appear, and with that self-consciousness, a determined effort to bring forth all of life to an higher understanding of its potential. So if man degrades these bodies, they're degrading the earth. And we see that reflected in the world in which you live. If there's no respect for the body, we see no respect for the earth. And that our basis for union is not material ideas. We think of perhaps a very good example is the 60s and the 70s of this century. That there was a cry, there was an opening of hearts and of minds to live together as one. And the whole idea of communal living sprang up again. It's not a new idea, it's a very old idea. But the failure of that expression was found in the ideas that were held for unity. As long as the ideas that were held for unity were of a material nature, and that the differences of personality always destroyed that unity. And lo and behold, we come to theosophy and we are a commune, a community of like-minded individuals that keep before them the similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and these three fundamental ideas, and try to live their life according to these ideas. It does not tell anyone how to live, does not tell anyone how to do, but it asks everyone to endeavor to express themselves as best they see fit. And always reminds us that we are not here alone, and we're not here for ourselves only, but we are here for each other. And this is perhaps the lost chord of our humanity, is that we do not know that we are so interlinked with each other that we have such a great effect on each other. And we just need to look at the world in which we live. We are not separate. We are a oneness. And when we realize that, each individually, we can come together as a group on a higher basis for thought and action. And that would be these three fundamental ideas.
We were just thinking about the statement about working on the diamond, but if we look at the ideas, the soul, as that diamond soul within, maybe what we mean is working on the different fittings from life to life till we get the proper fitting so that diamond can shine forth what it really is. Not the diamond, the fittings, the lives.
Yes. The diamond, we all have a diamond soul, but the expression of it is hidden from us. So it's how we, from what point of view do we come to this idea? But each life is only an opportunity for the expression of that light and life that lies within us. If we do not know that it is within us, how can we ever express it? How can we ever express it? If we think we have evolved from the lowest form of life through all these kingdoms into the animal kingdom, then the human kingdom, what hope is there? What chance? But if we embrace this idea that we are godlike in our nature and that we are evolving from within outward, the images which it conjures up are far greater and far more ennobling than being evolved from an ape.
We hear that a lot here, that everything evolves from within outward, but we got to back it up with something, otherwise we don't know what it means. We hear things like people evolve by means of by self-induced means and self-devised methods. What's the mean? What's the method? And otherwise, evolve from within without. I mean, that sounds passive to me. Unless we're given the basics. What are they?
Well, the basics were just expressed. The three fundamental ideas, and their ideas rule the world. That is our basis. Are the ideas that we hold to be true? If we hold the truth that we are here for one life and that's it, that's not the truth. If someone can die for our sins, that's not the truth. We need to find out what the truth is. And these three fundamental propositions or ideas are the backdrop for us to investigate what we already know and determine for ourselves whether it's the truth. So the evolving from within outward are those ideas which we hold to be true. We see ourselves in the circumstances of life as they now are because of the ideas that we have held. No other reason. It's the ideas that we have held. We find the world and ourselves in the present conditions that we now exist.
So just as a follow-up to that, but just holding ideas doesn't cause human evolution. I mean, we understand if we use our ideas that we hold to be true as a basis for action, then our actions are going to be very different if we hold universal ideas as true. What are the actions that we have to engage in? There has to be causes.
Well,
an idea is passive if it's not going to be action.
Well, the basis is the idea. The basis is the idea. The effect is the action. But every action is based on an idea. And we are, if we read the Bhagavad Gita, we know that we are impelled to act. We're always acting. We are always acting. We do not act. That is just the human condition. But if we don't hold the right ideas or universal ideas as the basis for our action, our actions turn to dust. But if we hold that my action is not done for me, it is done for all of us. Okay? Now that may be ambiguous, but we do not act selfishly. We do not hoard money, we do not hoard our emotions, we do not hoard our happiness, we do not hoard anything for ourselves. We freely give of who and what we are. But if we do not have a firm basis of ideas and truth, we are always back and forth with the ways of life. Yes?
From a purely modern scientific perspective, evolution is, whether we're we're speaking of the mind or the body, is guided by hereditary changes, hereditary changes of the genes and so forth, and the environment. So if you change the environment of the genes, you evolve. What is the relationship from a theosophical point of view between the heredity and the genetic endowment we have and the ideas we hold either now or in the past?
Well, the question of science, you know, that everything is found in that gene, that within that gene is the accumulated karmic tendencies of our very nature, and that this body is simply an expression of spirit, and that it has evolved to what it is now because of the spiritual evolution that has taken place. There is always a need for a better expression of spirit. And when it is no longer a proper vehicle, it's like a house. We build a house, and someone is very intelligent, and they build a house perfect for them to live in it. Well, at some point, that house is no longer suitable for them. So they move on and build a better and grander house. Well, what happens to that old house? Well, other beings can move into it and use it. Or it can be torn down, but the plan still exists for that house, and that it can be rebuilt again. You know, the genes are simply a storehouse of experience and of tendencies, and we're not quite sure how to express this, but they become the guiding force, but they are prompted by spirit. They are not prompted by the environment, even though the environment restrains them, but the expression of it is purely from a higher plane. Is that what you were looking for? Or
if we understand what you're saying, the genetic inheritance we have and the environment we have is it's a fact. But it's an effect. It's not
the cause.
It's the effect of the causes we've set up in the past through our thinking that attract us to these elements in nature.
Yes. Well put. Yes.
I believe in the power of myth, and I think modern myths are in our movies. One of my favorites is The Matrix. And when Neo's talking to the Oracle, you know, she offers him the candy, and he's like, well, you know if I'm going to take it or not. And I think her response is, well, you know, you've already made the choice. You're only here to understand why you've made the choice. And from my standpoint, that explains this whole evolution coming from the inside out. What I believe is that our choices are made on the subconscious level. Our choices are not made on the conscious level. And we're only here to understand the choices that have already been made. So the subconscious ends up manifesting our world, and we're here just to understand.
Well, we can understand that, yes. That, again, it goes back to the fundamental idea of ideas. Ideas do rule the world. So if in the root of your idea is that we live but once, your decisions have already been made because of that basic idea that you hold. But if you hold to the idea of karma and reincarnation, your ideas are different now. That responsibility becomes a factor in all of this. And is this not simply a chance encounter that comes before us, but it is something which we have created in the past and now comes to us again. The only difference is that at that moment, because we have a divine nature, we can make a choice. The choice often is personal or impersonal, for the better or for the deer. So there's always a choice. Even though that we have set it up in the past, and in the past we may have made a different choice, but it wasn't in harmony. So that choice will come back to us again and again and again until it's resolved in our nature. The universe is ever grinding away. There's a constant battle going on. Constant battle. And these bodies are an example of where that battle has taken place and harmony has been gained. Harmony in the mineral kingdom, harmony in the vegetable kingdom, harmony in the animal kingdom, and ultimately harmony in the human kingdom. But that harmony is something that has to be endeavored or sought after. And knowing that we are at the apex of this evolutionary process, we can either retard evolution or help it forward.
And one of the things that's been spoken about all morning but hasn't been called this is ethics. And we don't know how many people saw 60 Minutes on Sunday. There was a fascinating scientific study. This woman's been working on it for years and years and years, with six-month-old babies, and they watch a little puppet show. There's two bears in different colored shirts and a creature in the middle who's trying to open something and can't. One of the bears helps him, and one jumps on it and closes it. In every instance offered the two bears, the child chose the one that helped. So they're actually proving scientifically that ethics is something we are coded with internally, shall we say, scientifically, and bring back with us. Down to 3 months old, they were able to prove this, that they would choose the one that would help and would be of service. So it's actually coming into science now as well.
Well, it's something that's been said that every child has a Buddha. You can see the Buddha in every child that is first born. You see the light that glows from a child first born. And we as parents endeavor to nurture that Buddha nature, that kindness, that ethics that wells up in all of us. But as we know, our journey is often blocked by past circumstances or ideas that are held by our parents or those around us. So it is not by chance. We are the directors of this great play, and we decide what is going to be done. Maybe not what comes to us, but how it leaves us. We always have that choice. We can react or we can act. It depends upon our attitude of mind. Well, we've exhausted that cycle. Well, we'd just like to remind us that we need to keep aware of cycles. They are operating in our lives as we eat, as we sleep, as we think, and in the world around us where we live. And our task is to ride that tide of that cycle and to endeavor to understand the good and also that which is not so good. So as we come into this cycle of giving thanks, we're reminded of those less fortunate. And then in the solstice, we are reminded that as that light has now passed into the earth and comes forth again, that our intuitional nature is ripe, and we need to nurture that. And we need to understand that how we think is how we become. So we need to think the best thoughts that we can. So we invite everyone to go to our book table and find something to help us remember and who we are and where we're going. Meeting adjourned.